You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's the Planet Football Podcast. Grant Wall here with Luis Miguel Echegaray, and obviously the circumstances are a little unusual here, my friend.
They are very unusual, but it's always good to talk to you and, you know, discuss what's going on, not just in soccer, but around the world.
Yeah, you and I are both at home right now. Just about everyone in New York is who doesn't have to be somewhere for work. A lot of respect for those guys. Obviously, coronavirus has become a lot more serious everywhere, but including in the United States in recent days. And just be safe, everyone. I think we're finally starting to get an idea of how serious this is going to be, how long the sports world is going to be shut down, but also how daily life is going to be really impacted for a long time here. And how are you dealing with things?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I think just for our listeners, you know, Grant and I discussed that when we wanted to do this podcast, obviously continue with it, was also to really touch on the human element, you know, because sports aside, this is really about us, people, and the different, you know, obstacles that they have to go through right now during COVID-19. It's been tough for me and my family, you know, not so much, you know, personally me, but my wife is a public school teacher. And as some may or may not know, you know, it only came until yesterday on Sunday when New York City decided to do the right thing and close schools. I don't want to get too much into it, but it was a very, you know, tough situation for a lot of public school teachers and staff and parents and children, because, you know, ultimately, you know, schools are not just there to educate, but they're also are havens and nurturing places for kids. But really, it was a really tough time for educators these last few days, just, you know, basically hoping that the state and the city was going to come to its senses and close everything. Because as you said at the very beginning, you know, this is a time now where social distancing is key, staying at home is key, large crowds are not something that anybody wants to do at this situation. And obviously schools being in the city, at least 500, you know, people inside buildings, it was just a recipe for disaster. So it's been tough, but you know, now, you know, we're all coming to the realization that it's getting a little bit easier. So things are a little bit better, but you know, I think it's all about being defiant and just being strong and having unity with everybody. How about you? How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, as most listeners probably know, my wife is a infectious disease doctor. She was on the podcast that came out last Thursday talking about all this. And you know, just to give you a sense of how things have advanced, even then, which seems like a world ago, she was recommending that games be played without crowds. And now we are in a situation where the games aren't happening at all. And we've got athletes who have tested positive for the coronavirus. I think the Rudy Gobert situation in the NBA was a moment when people really took stock of how serious this could be and that the game shouldn't be taking place at all. And then I think it was also a big deal Sunday night when the CDC came out and said, we recommend that there be no gatherings in the entire United States of more than 50 people for the next 8 weeks. So not 2 weeks, not 3 weeks, 8 weeks. And I think that was the moment when people maybe started to understand the gravity of this situation, and that, at least in a sports sense, it's going to be a really long time before we see sports get back up to speed and take place again. And we're just going to have to deal with that. Sports are our livelihood, but some things are bigger than sports, and public safety is a big part of that. We are going to talk about soccer in this podcast, so don't worry, guys. U.S. Soccer has given us plenty to talk about with their meltdown, but I do think it's important just to share what we're experiencing here, and we know that listeners are experiencing a lot of this stuff too. You know, I am indoors all day at home here. You know, New York City, where we live, has shut down restaurants, bars, gyms starting tonight, except for like takeout delivery. And so we're getting toward a situation here where it's just going to be grocery stores, pharmacies open, I think. And so, you know, like, just wash your hands, folks, use sanitizer, stay at home. Anything non-essential outside where you live, if you can do, if you don't have to go outside, don't do it, because this is serious stuff. And this week, the next 2 weeks, are going to be really important to see if the United States cannot become Italy, because you don't want to become Italy right now.
Yep. And to just adding to literally that last point, let's learn from that. Let's, you know, if we're all on social, we're reading, learn from what these countries have been going through. Italy, Spain now also becoming just as, you know, emphatic in terms of the cases. So we just need to learn. And the last thing that I'll say is, I think this is a perfect opportunity to just be united in whatever that may be. You know, I was watching clips this weekend of, obviously, the viral clips in Italy where people in their balconies singing and listening to opera singers. And then in Spain, everybody clapping as a way to thank their health workers. I mean, you know, even something as simple as that can just, you know, offer so much in terms of unifying. So, you know, let's learn, wash those hands, stay at home, and just keep listening and staying united.
Yeah. And there is, as I mentioned, some soccer to talk about. U.S. soccer had a total meltdown last week, and Carlos Cordero, the president, resigned. Cindy Parlow Cohn, the vice president, now takes over as the federation president. There is a huge leadership vacuum right now in U.S. soccer. There is no CEO. There hasn't been for a while. There's no vice president. There's no chief commercial officer now that Jay Berhalter is gone. Sunil Gulati is no longer the immediate past president, so he's now off the board. And maybe the best thing to do here is just to sort of fill people in on what caused this, what happened. Obviously, U.S. soccer being in a meltdown isn't the most recent development. This has been pretty much the case for the last couple years, ever since the U.S. men failed to qualify for the World Cup. But the latest situation was that the legal strategy for the U.S. Soccer Federation had come out over the last couple of weeks, and on Monday last week, it was more crystal clear than ever that they were using a legal argument that women were inherently lesser than men, that they didn't have the same ability, they didn't have the same responsibility, they didn't have the same skill as the U.S. men's team, and that's why they weren't paid equally. And that kind of strategy, it just makes absolutely, it's so stupid on the part of U.S. soccer. And it may have helped win them a case in a court of law, but nobody there seemed to take into account that you can win a case and still lose. And that's what happened with this strategy, which is just, you know, completely offensive. And sponsors for U.S. soccer, like Coca-Cola was the first one, but later on Volkswagen and Budweiser and others, called out U.S. soccer in very stark terms, saying this was offensive. They wanted to talk to U.S. soccer immediately. And then the players protested for their She Believes game on Wednesday night by turning their warm-up shirts inside out so that the shield of U.S. soccer was invisible and all that was there was the four stars. And it was just a genius protest. And then the players, instead of taking a picture before the game of the starting 11, had all of the players there in that protest, not smiling for the cameras. And it was just a really dignified way to protest. And then Carlos Cordero issued an apology literally late in that game. But that night I wrote a column that Cordero should resign. That was the first thing that should happen, not the only thing. And then the next day, Cordero did in fact resign. So that's where we are as of right now here. And as you were watching all of this, what was going through your mind?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind was, and you wrote it, and obviously it's no surprise that we often always come in agreement with these things. This is, you know, as horrific as those legal statements were, and, you know, how everybody reacted to it, the sad reality is that this is actually emblematic of a culture that's existed in U.S. soccer for years now. This isn't something new. So the scary thing about it all was the fact that, you know, these legal statements about basically stating that, you know, women are inferior to men, you know, was at some point approved, right? It was at some point, you know, sort of partnered alongside the thoughts of U.S. soccer. And that's, to me, the scariest thing. And Carlos Cordero knows this. He knows this. And that's, you know, one of the many reasons why he resigned. But there is now, I mean, if there wasn't before, it definitely exists now. There is a clear, clear underlining thread of misogyny within the organization and just a lack of understanding. And you can throw away any kind of, like, you know, woke kind of mentality or storyline. This is about, you know, what's right and how female players in this country have just been completely not just disregarded but insulted. And it's just emblematic of something that's been going on for years and years and years.
Yeah, we've kind of suspected it. We've sort of hinted at it. You know, we've talked about it, but never before had U.S. soccer put this in writing.
Yeah.
On behalf of the federation.
Yeah.
And it's the whole thing is just tells you all you sort of needed to know about the judgment, lack of judgment of the people in charge. And I get that there are lots of questions about the U.S. Soccer Board of Directors, right? How much did each one of them know? What did each of them think? And I will say this, the reason I did not call for the resignation of the entire board in my column is that I know that there are people on the board who don't feel this way. And I don't think every single one of them should have to go. But you know that there are people on the board who do think that way. And I'm trying to find out who those people are. And I can't tell you for certain right now, Lydia Walke, the general counsel for U.S. soccer, should go.
Yep.
In a heartbeat, because she's in charge of coordinating that legal strategy with their hired law firm. And either she knew about it and approved it and as a result should resign, or she didn't approve it, didn't know about it, and then she should resign as well. She's kind of either or, I think. But, you know, the rest of the board needs to take a very long, hard look at itself about how this board functions, because it looks entirely dysfunctional to me. And Cindy Parlow Cohn is going to face just a huge challenge here. This is a thankless job. She gets paid zero money for it, as do everyone on the board. Nobody gets paid. And she's got to figure things out here when there's a power vacuum, when it's possible for sinister negative forces to get power potentially here. So, like, it's not necessarily going to get better. So the U.S. soccer needs to to figure out next steps moving forward here. And there's going to be a World Cup here in 2026. I've never seen U.S. soccer in a position like this, and I do plan to write a column this week on what those challenges are and how they should at least try to deal with them.
More urgently, Grant, I had a question, which I'm sure a lot of listeners are trying to, and of course, please visit us on Planet Football, as not just Grant, but you know, our great Michael McCann also wrote a great, you know, piece from a legal standpoint. Where do we go from here at a more immediate situation? As the trial set to begin May 5th,
right?
You know, it seems obviously, as McCann noted, that a settlement is now more than likely in favor of the players. Where do we go from here?
Well, there's multiple cases right now, and I think U.S. soccer needs to get out from under all of these lawsuits and, first and foremost, get this case with the U.S. women's players settled. Get it behind them, because I know there were people on the board saying that. Don Garber was actually one of them, saying that to Carlos Cordero for months. Get this settled. Get it behind you. And that didn't happen. But now you would think it would have to happen. But there's other lawsuits as well. Hope Solo has a similar lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation.
Right.
The NASL does. The U.S. Soccer Foundation, a charity, sued U.S. Soccer. That has continued. And so that would be the first thing, I think. But I think U.S. Soccer now needs to get a new general counsel. And so the trial was supposed to start May 5th. Now, with coronavirus shutting down so many aspects of public life, that may or may not happen. The Olympics may or may not happen.
Yeah.
U.S. Soccer already canceled the men's and women's national team games in March and April. So we'll have to see how much can actually get done here. But I think U.S. Soccer just needs to take action and do something to get these lawsuits behind them, because so much about recent months was things weren't getting done.
Yeah, and it just goes back to my very first point, which is just emblematic of a culture that just straight up just needs to change. I think this is not a short answer situation. This is something where the entire restructuring needs to happen, and it needs to happen now.
Yeah, and I'm planning to talk to a good governance expert, an independent governance expert, to see what they think U.S. soccer should do, because there's a lot, quite obviously. You had written something this morning on Liga MX and what's going on with that. What's the latest?
Yeah, just a quick update on Liga MX, which, you know, by the time the weekend was beginning, was the last North American soccer league standing, defiant, albeit negligent in a way, you know, as most of you may or may not know, if you follow the league, Liga MX from around Thursday evening was saying, nope, that the league's going to continue. Friday night had two matches with fans. And Saturday, with four matches in the men's side and a few other matches in the women's side, by Saturday afternoon, they changed their tune by saying it would now be played behind closed doors. And then on Sunday afternoon, as Cruz Azul was playing Club America, a very important game in the standings, Liga MX once again changed its tune by saying that this would be the last one and it would suspend the league until further notice. So it's just been a real sort of dilly-dallying mentality from Liga MX, procrastinating. And there are many facets to this. And as you mentioned, the piece will come out later. It's not that long, but it's really just an update on what everything's been going on, and kind of a parallel to how the government in Mexico had been taking, you know, coronavirus not that seriously. The president, literally this weekend, was touring rural areas in Mexico, shaking hands, hugging, kissing constituents, and he tweeted it to his 6.5 million followers. So, you know, even though the cases are not as large as its northern neighbor, they are climbing, you know, as of Sunday night, it was around, I think, 53, at least 53 cases in Mexico. And that was a bump from 41 the day before. So, you know, that the numbers are climbing. There was a huge music concert in Mexico with people attending. So the league, Liga MX, was pretty much following this sort of notion. And luckily, by Sunday afternoon, it said that the Cruz Azul Club America game was going to be the last one. If you want even more irony, Grant, that game, which was won by Cruz Azul 1-0, scored by Jonathan Rodriguez, a Uruguayan striker who's the league's top scorer right now. But in the 99th minute, Grant, Club America were awarded a penalty. And in steps Club America to try and take that penalty, and it's saved by Cruz Azul's goalkeeper. And what's the name of Cruz Azul's goalkeeper? Jesus Corona. You can't get more ironic if you tried. So that was the last piece of action. And now there's no Liga MX until further notice. But again, it was just this back and forth from Friday, Thursday night on just how this was just looking. And really, it really should have just happened way before. It just, it obviously didn't take it as seriously.
Yeah, I think we're learning, whether it's in sports leagues or things that have nothing to do with sports, just political leaders, that leadership comes from taking action, not in trying to play down things. I think there was a real confusion that you would panic people if you took action, but it's kind of the opposite. And that's on both sides of the political spectrum. I think Mayor de Blasio here is a Democrat in New York, was pretty terrible for quite a while in playing down the situation. And finally on Sunday night, he started, you know, he closed the schools, as you mentioned, and seems to now being taking decisive action, but it took way, way too long. This isn't a partisan thing, you know, it shouldn't be. This is a pandemic, and you have to do what science tells you to do. You need to show caution, and any risks just shouldn't be taken at this point.
Yep, let's overreact in order to be safe. That's pretty much the consensus, And luckily, people like you said are taking note.
Well, I'm glad we got a chance to connect today. I know there's not soccer on the field to talk about right now, but it makes me feel better to talk to you a little bit.
Yes, my friend, equally. And next week, I'll promise, maybe we'll do a review of my FIFA matches.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.